The California recall has focused attention on California's love affair with direct democracy. 24 states have initiative processes, but only in California do the voters more or less run the state from the voting booth. Up to now, that hasn't involved firing top elected officials, but it has meant that laws dealing with some of the most important areas of government are created and put into effect, not by legislators in Sacramento, but through voter initiatives. Propositions have been passed on education, criminal justice, social services, term limits, Indian casinos, water. Last year's Proposition 42 is typical. It mandated that the state's sales tax on gasoline be spent only on transportation. And that took away from Sacramento any choice over how to spend that $1.5 billion worth of tax revenue over the next 5 years. Philip Eisenberg is a lawyer and lobbyist who served in the California State Assembly from 1982 to 1996, giving him a front row seat to the process.
The voters are interested in doing two things that it just seems to me most important. They like to limit taxation and they like to mandate spending. And sometimes they do both.
Many initiatives in California offer some sort of a glitter, a surface attraction, more funding for schools or lock up criminals for life. They have great appeal, but there are often unintended consequences.
Oh, sure. And it happens all the time. Let me just give you a couple of illustrations. When Proposition 13 passed and the voters said, hey, we want to lower our property taxes and limit the increase in property taxes forever in the future, it passed handsomely in the state of California. It was truly, in my judgment, largely a populist revolt, not just an economic special interest gimmick. Now, most citizens didn't understand property tax revenues have always been reserved for cities, for counties, for schools. And so what happened immediately and obviously, the legislature just picked up a bigger obligation of schools. When you convert school funding from what it was before Prop 13, roughly a third from the state, into what it is now, which is roughly two-thirds from the state, fundamentally your control of education transfers to state government. The three strikes law was a clear illustration where the second and third strikes, for which you could eventually spend your life in prison, could be for nonviolent crimes. And, you know, nobody was paying much attention to the fact that there would wind up being several thousand people in state prison who have never been convicted of a violent crime ever, but are spending their time in state prison, their lives in state prison, at a societal cost of roughly $30,000 a year.
Take us back. Give us a thumbnail history of how the proposition came to loom so large on the political landscape in California.
Well, you know, this will take you way back. California became a state in 1850, and the progressive movement swept through certainly the western United States and arrived in California. And the resentment was felt by many in the state to powerful economic interests, in particular Southern Pacific Railroad, but not limited to that. So in October of 1911, the California voters adopted a process of reform, and the three major reforms they adopted at that time was the initiative, the referenda, and the recall of elected officials at the state and local level, which of course is much in the news today, a process that's been around now for 92 years.
Now, this all looks like populism, as if the grassroots has enormous influence, especially starting with Proposition 13, the tax revolt. But in fact, is it populism?
The answer is yes and no. Yes and no. It's probably fair to say that economic special interests have utilized the process to further their own goals. I mean, in 1922, kind of an illustration, after many failed previous attempts, chiropractors gained the legal right to practice their trade in the state of California. They'd been thwarted in the legislature before. They went to the ballot, and the voters finally said yes. Now, all of the initiatives have interests involved. Some are uniquely and particularly generated by economic interests.
What is lost when voters bypass entirely the legislature and the governor and miss out, if you will, on having laws that have gone through the committee process and floor debate at the State House.
Well, what you miss primarily is a clear look, a review, a skeptical commentary on proposals. And the longer it takes to have a piece of legislation go through the legislature, be debated, yelled about, editorials written, press paying attention, the more likely that you tend to sandpaper the provisions of that law, clarify ambiguities, resolve problems. And what you fundamentally miss, of course, in the initiative process is the chance of any compromise. Now, for a lot of people, they say, well, we don't want to compromise. We know what's right. I'm right. I just want to win. And that is the attraction of the initiative process, or one of them. It is aggravating. I spent much of my legislative career turning into a budget hawk, albeit a liberal Democrat and a budget hawk, because I couldn't see how you could indefinitely run a government fairly and responsibly where your hands were tied on raising money and simultaneously you were ordered to continue spending. That dichotomy, that inconsistency is deeply troubling to me, not, I think, troubling to most of the voters.
What do then California legislatures, and in a sense the governor, have left to do when it comes to the big ticket items?
Yeah, in California, you have relatively few broad powers that you can exercise anymore with care. You can't raise money easily in California. You can't make monumental social shifts, even if you think they're needed, and it takes forever to do anything. But, people have learned to live with this. And Californians are remarkably sanguine about their right to vote on things, even though they say there are too many things on the ballot, they're too long, they're too detailed, and I don't like it. But they've resisted virtually all changes in the initiative process for 92 years.
Phil Eisenberg, thanks very much for joining us.
Good. Thank you.
Phil Eisenberg is a lawyer and lobbyist in Sacramento and a former member of the California State Assembly.